Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning and welcome to the first day of oral arguments of the October term of the South Dakota Supreme Court. This morning, the first case for oral argument is Johnny Whipp and others appellants versus John Waldner and others appellees. For the appellants, we have Mr. James McMahon, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the appellees, we have Ms. Jody Odegaard-Smith, an attorney from Mitchell. Mr. McMahon, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court. I represent Johnny Whipp, Jake Hofer Sr., and Alvin Hofer. These three gentlemen are the duly elected officers of the, I'll just call it the Hutterville, Hutterian Brethren, Inc. Corporation. I'll refer to it as Hutterville. As we stand here today, they're being deprived of the opportunity to exercise their rights, duties, and obligations of those offices. I think we need to start with just a little bit of history. This corporation was incorporated in 1983. That date is going to become somewhat significant as I proceed with my argument. The Hutterite Church is a broad church, and I know you have some background in it by the because of the Decker-Chitter case, and there are a lot of facts that are similar. Within the broad church, there are three conferences, as you well know. We're dealing today with the Schmidloit Conference. Now, back in 1993, as you know, there was a disagreement within the Schmidloit Conference. Because of that disagreement, there was a split. Some of the members of the Schmidloit Conference followed Reverend Whipp. Some followed Jacob Kleinseltzer. And there were some, like Hutterville, where the members were split. And they were split approximately evenly. In those few situations, most of the colonies agreed that they would try to live together peacefully. History shows us that when a colony gets to be approximately 100 to 120, they split anyway because they're too big. They form a new colony. That was the plan at Hutterville and other colonies that were split. However, in 2008, a majority of the voting members at Hutterville became disenchanted with George Waldner Sr.'s leadership. Because of that, they called a special meeting in February of 2009. At that special meeting, they removed the officers and directors and elected new directors. Now, this was done by a majority of the voting members. They then had a directors meeting and elected new officers. After that happened, Mr. Waldner Sr., who had been in control, refused to relinquish control.
Were the people who were voted out given notice of the meeting?
Yes.
Were they there?
Pardon me?
Were they there?
Yes.
Okay.
I can't tell you that all of them were there.
All right.
And I would tell you that as we proceed through here, of course, Judge Von Wall looked at all of that and found that it was done correctly and legitimately. Okay. But we'll get there. Because Mr. Waldner would not relinquish control, I started a declaratory judgment action asking that the court declare that my clients were the rightful and duly elected officers and directors and ask for a temporary restraining order to restrain the other side from enforcing themselves as officers and directors. Defendant's counsel made a similar motion for a declaratory judgment and a temporary restraining order. We had a hearing, and basically it was a mirror image. Both sides wanted the court to say, okay, our clients are in charge. We had that hearing. Judge Von Wald issued a temporary restraining order in our favor. He declared that my clients were rightfully elected. and should be in control. After the hearing, defendants then answered and counterclaimed. In the answer and counterclaim, their counterclaim basically sets forth the same thing that they asked for in the TRO. In other words, they wanted the court to declare that they were the rightful officers. There was no mention of any First Amendment issues at that time. Prior to them answering, Mr. Waldner Sr. and I'm not sure who else, but they had a meeting and purported to excommunicate Johnny Wiff and some of my clients. Now, I say purported to because I think that's going to make no difference as we look through this. What happened after that is a motion was made to the trial court again then by the defendants and said, you need to dismiss this because you no longer have jurisdiction. Because we've thrown in this issue of excommunication, it now gets you entangled in the First Amendment.
But wasn't there an election?
Pardon me?
After the excommunication, there was another election or meeting of some kind.
There was. There was one in June, and what happened was one of the people that was a director switched sides again. So there was another meeting
I'm thinking about something else. In October, wasn't there something later in October?
Okay. I think I know what you're thinking about. And there's a number of meetings that were supposedly held by, I'll call it the other side. But the problem is none of those were noticed correctly because the bylaws provide that to call a special meeting, it has to be called by the president or two directors. They didn't have a president or two directors to call a meeting. Now, this, again, was all put before Judge Von Wald. Okay. And he decided in our favor. So where we're at then is there was this motion to dismiss brought back before Judge Von Wald, and Judge Von Wald agreed with the defendants and said, I think now I'm entangled and I have to dismiss this. That's what brings us here. And of course, I don't think there's much disagreement in looking at the briefs as to what the test is. It's a neutral principles of law test, and there's not much disagreement about what that provides. Where there's disagreement, of course, as always, is in the facts.
Do you have any quarrel with Decker being the controlling law?
No. I think it's clear that that's...
So you're saying under Decker you win?
I'm saying exactly that.
Okay.
Yeah. And the reason is this. I think this whole excommunication thing is a red herring. For a couple of reasons. First, when you look at the articles and the bylaws, they talk about being a member, actually they talk about being associated with the Hutterite Church or the Hutterian Brethren Church. It never talks about different groups. There's no mention of a group one or a group two or a Schmiedlite conference or anything. It talks about the broad Hutterite Church. My clients can't be excommunicated by Mr. Waldner and his people from the broad Hutterite Church. They may pretend to excommunicate them from group one, but they can't kick them out of the church. Now, since there's no reference in any of the bylaws or articles.
But wait, I got to stop you right there because can we decide that? Can we decide whether they can be kicked out of, quote, the church?
You don't have to. That's my point. And no, to answer your question, I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But I don't think you have to. I think under neutral principles, you can look at the articles and the bylaws. They talk about the Hutterite Church, and there is no dispute that my clients are associated with the Hutterite Church, which is all that's required. The dispute is within the groups.
Doesn't Decker say that the operation of the colony and the church are inseparable, that there is no division between secular and religious life in a Hutterite colony?
There's language that says that in the articles, and there's language in Decker that talks about that. But where I'm going with this is that the articles and the bylaws control the corporation, and yes, it is a religious corporation. But the rules that they established themselves are set forth in the articles and the bylaws. There's nothing that talks about group one. There's nothing that talks about once you're an elder in the church at Hutterville that you get to stay there for life. It all talks about majority vote.
Okay.
And my point is that if a majority of the people of Hutterville decide that they want to associate with one conference or the other within the broad Hutterite church, they can do that.
Well, here's my problem. I, as a circuit judge, had one of these dispute, and it was over the Wythe-Clinecesser schism, and they brought in religious texts written in German that were supposed to assist me in deciding who was going to control the colony. I can't read German, and I'm certainly not qualified to determine what is correct of the Hutterite faith. How do we avoid that kind of entanglement if we send this back to Judge Von Wolf?
Well, because you never have to get there. All you have to look at are the articles and the bylaws, and it's all controlled by majority vote. That's all I'm saying. We're just trying to determine who's the president of this corporation. It's no different than any other
corporation. But if you're excommunicated, you can't vote, right?
But yes, you can if you're part of the Hutterite Church. They have not been excommunicated from the Hutterite Church. And that's what I'm trying to say is there's different groups.
But that's, I got to stop you right there, because if you say, but they have not been excommunicated, the case is over. We can't make that decision.
Well,
we can't decide if they've been excommunicated.
There's no dispute about the fact that they're members of the Hutterite Church, Your Honor.
But you have affidavits that you filed and the other side have filed. And the affidavits on your side say, we are members of the church, and they're not. And they filed affidavits saying that your side are not members of the church.
I think if you read their affidavit closer, what it says is they're not a member of group one. And that's a very important distinction. There's not an affidavit from their side that says they're not members of the Hutterite Church, Your Honor. They are.
But then do we have to decide if you're a member, can you be a member of the church and not a member of group one? That's another religious issue.
No, you don't have to decide that, because all you have to do is look at the articles and the bylaws. And that's where I started, because it does not talk about group one. It does not talk about group two. It talks about the Hutterite Church. And just in Cheddar, you know, when you read here, it talks about there was a majority decision to go one way or the other. Okay? That's what we have here.
Mr. McMahon, I don't have it right in front of me, but didn't the articles of the bylaws define members as living on the land and able to participate in receiving benefits from trust?
I think what it says is to be a member, you have to live in the community, and you have to depend on the treasury for your support.
All right. Now, is there any part of that that depends on a religious designation? In other words, does excommunication, however that's defined, affect benefits from the trust, or is that the only requirement for membership, or those two things, living and receiving benefits?
That's the only requirement. That, and then in other places it talks, I think it's in Article 11 in the Articles of Incorporation, if you read that, I think all it says is must be associated with the Hutterite Church or the Hutterian Church. Again, it doesn't talk about group one. And there's no question, again, my clients are still living at Hutterville and still are supported by the community. So they're members, and the majority of the voting members elected them. And you don't have to decide who's right about excommunication, who belongs to what group. They all belong to the Hutterite Church, and they're no different than any other corporation under the rules. They agreed to majority rules. And if you're not going to even let courts decide who the rightful officers are, you're letting them avail themselves of all the benefits and the protections of a corporation, and you're saying no one, no court in this state can ever look at this corporation. You can do what you want. You can ignore your own bylaws. You can ignore your own articles. And if you're, once you're in charge, You are a dictator. You're there forever because nobody can do anything about it. And that's simply not the way it is. By looking at the articles and bylaws, you can decide what the vote was, which is what Judge Von Wald did. And that's all we're saying here. If the bylaws, and they could have done this, they could have amended those bylaws in 1992 after the disagreement and the split, and they could have said Hutterville is associated with Group 1, and to be a member of Hutterville, you have to be a member of Group 1. They could have done that. They did not. So we operate the way it is, and you don't have to go any further. And I agree with you, Judge Jenner, that if you go there, you can't go there and decide who's a member and who's not. I agree with that. But you don't have to here because the articles and the bylaws tell us. They tell us you just have to be part of the Hutterite Church.
And, but how do we decide whether that means Group 1 or not? I mean, some might argue that you're not a member of the Hutterite Church unless you're in Group 1.
Well, first of all, you can't decide that.
That's my point.
Yeah, but you don't have to decide that because the articles and bylaws don't get that specific.
Well, what about the Article 2, Section 1 of the bylaws says that the directors must be a member of the Hutterite Church?
I agree. That's what it says. You aren't going to find Group 1 in there anywhere.
And how do we know, under the affidavits that have been filed, how do we know whether these people are members of the Hutterite Church?
There's no
they're both claiming each other are not.
There's no dispute as to them being members of the Hutterite Church. There's no affidavit that says my clients are not members of the Hutterite Church. There's one that says they've been kicked out of Group 1. There's no affidavit from my people that said they aren't the other side is not a member of Group 1. Not a member of the other section.
It says they're not a member of the church, I think is what it says.
Yeah.
Something like that.
The thing is that if it's a split between groups, and one group can't affect the other group, but it's like, I don't care, throughout the Lutherans. I mean, there's different conferences, not literally. There's different conferences within the Lutheran church. You know, you're all Lutherans, but you're part of one particular conference. And like I say, they could have amended the bylaws and said, Hutterville is and always will be a Group 1. Now, if you don't like it, move. But they didn't, and it doesn't.
You mentioned the Lutheran. Same Lutheran comes to the Hutterite colony and says, I want to live with you, but I want to remain a Lutheran. They won't allow that. Well,
that's true.
To be a member of the church.
Of the Hutterite Church.
Okay.
Yes. I was just saying there are different, you know, I'm not a Lutheran, but I see different Lutheran churches.
Right.
But they're all, when they have, you know, they're all Lutheran.
But to live in the colony and be a member of the colony, you have to be a member of the Hutterite Church.
Of the Hutterite Church.
Okay.
The broad Hutterite Church. Within that church, there's those three different conferences. You know, before the split, there were three conferences. They weren't all members of the same conference, but they were all Hutterites. So, you know, that's my point.
Let me clarify this. I think there's probably no disagreement about this, but you could not be an officer of the corporation unless you were a member of the Hutterite Church, correct?
I agree with that. And I just want to say one last thing on membership, okay? Membership of Hutterville, the corporation. If you look at the bylaws and the articles say, you know, you can be expelled as a member pursuant to the action by the board of directors as set forth in the bylaws. The bylaws say majority vote of the voting members. So to be removed from Hutterville, the corporation, not from the church, from Hutterville, the corporation, to be removed, you have to have a vote of the majority of the voting members. That there was never a vote of a majority of the voting members to remove my clients. They couldn't. We had the majority. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Ms. Odegaard Smith, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel, Jody Smith appearing on behalf of the appellees in this matter. The trial court did not err when it granted the motion to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. When all the pleadings filed in this matter are considered, it's clear that this is a religious dispute that can't be decided by a court under the U.S. Constitution or the South Dakota Constitution. The ultimate question in this case is, who controls Hutterville? Initially, it appeared that a court could make this determination based on secular provisions in the corporate bylaws and articles. It looked like all a court had to do was look at whether or not elections and meetings were properly held in accordance with the articles and bylaws. That all changed, however, after the temporary restraining order was entered by the trial court. That temporary restraining order restrained some of the appellees from acting as officers and directors of Hutterville. After this temporary restraining order was entered, the economic enterprises of the Hutterite colony and the religious principles were not one and the same. Yet the appellants, who followed Reverend Whiff, controlling the economic side of the corporation, and you had the appellees, specifically Reverend George Waldner Sr., who follows Reverend Kleinsaucer, controlling the religious side of the corporation. This lack of uniformity caused a lot of problems within the colony. Now, those problems are very natural because when you take a look at the articles and bylaws of the corporation in this case, they indicate that the economic side of the enterprise of the corporation are essentially inseparable from the religious principles. Articles 4, 7, and 11 of the Articles of Incorporation indicate this. Those articles make it very clear that the corporate purpose is to promote the Hutterian faith, and that the business the corporation engages in is to carry out that religious faith, and that the members shall be associated with the Hutterian Church, and that the corporation shall never be operated for the primary purposes of carrying on a trade for profit, but shall be operated to provide facilities to carry out the tenets of the Hutterian Church. After that temporary restraining order was entered, the church led by Reverend Kleinsaucer excommunicated the appellants. They were excommunicated for failing to abide by the rules of the church and the authority of the church elders.
What were they excommunicated from?
They were excommunicated from the church initially after the temporary restraining order was entered. And that was for violating the rules of the church and the rule and the authority of the elders, essentially George Waldner being one of the senior elders.
And the council talks about the global Hutterian faith church.
Mm-hmm.
They were excommunicated from that, or were they excommunicated from Group 1?
They were once the divide occurred back in 92, Hutterville, the Hutterite colony in question, chose to follow Reverend Kleinsaucer. George Waldner was the minister. At the time of the divide, all the ministers had a meeting and chose who they were going to follow. George Waldner was in control at that time. He was the minister. He chose to follow Reverend Kleinsaucer. And if you look at Article 9, Section 3 of the bylaws, it does say that all members recognize and abide by the rules of the Hutterian Church, and they will follow the authority of the presiding bishop or bishops of the Hutterian Church, to which all members through its local church belong. The local church in this case is the church followed by Reverend Kleinsaucer.
So they're excommunicated from the local church then?
Yeah, they're in the appellee's eyes, that is the only church, is the Kleinsaucer church. That is the Hutterite church.
But they're members of the Whip faction, so why would they care if they were excommunicated by Reverend Kleinsaucer?
Well, because they're all members of the church at Hutterville. I mean, they were members of the Kleinsaucer church. Appellants were, you know, attending church, and they were all living at Hutterville and members of the church, which followed Reverend Kleinsaucer.
Did the Whiff faction then counter with some counter excommunications or anything like that?
Nope.
Okay.
I also want to point out that some of the appellants were excommunicated for also breaching an affirmation they had signed, and that affirmation simply reaffirmed their beliefs in the church.
You know, let me divert you momentarily to to Article 9, Section 5 of the bylaws governing expulsion. It doesn't appear to me that there's any express provision that allows expulsion by excommunication. That seems to contemplate that all avenues of expulsion require some type of corporate act. Do you agree with that, and if so?
That is correct. I think the bylaws make it very clear that a member must be a member of the church. Specifically, it says directors must be a member of the church, but it says all members must abide by the rules of the Hutterian faith, and that Section 5 does lay out what is required for expelling a member, and the appellees did that. Once the appellants were excommunicated, they held a meeting on October 18th, 2009, to expel them as members of, appellants as members of the church.
Where is that in the record? Is that in an affidavit or?
The corporate meeting on October 18th, 2009, yes. It is in the affidavit of George Wallner. You're going to see it in Clerk's Index 197.
Well, I'm familiar with that affidavit, but you're saying that in there, there's a provision that says that they were removed in accordance with Article 9, Section 5?
I believe there's minutes from that meeting saying that the appellants were expelled as members of the corporation, and they were removed as officers and directors as well.
I want you to correct me because you're going to have a more familiar basis with it than I do. I just recall a general allegation that they were removed. Are you saying that it says they were removed pursuant to Article 9, Section 5?
I don't believe it refers to the article specifically. I believe it says since they're no longer members of the church, that they're not members of the corporation or officers or directors. And there was a vote on that by the majority of the members.
Now, the members of the colony have certain fundamental rights as citizens of South Dakota. They have certain fundamental rights as members of this corporation. Are all these nullified merely by producing a paper or whatever you have of excommunication, thus precluding these people from these rights that any other citizen in South Dakota would enjoy as a citizen or a member of a corporation?
Where
do we draw the line? I mean, Mr. McMahon in his argument basically said if we accept the argument that the trial court accepted, it nullifies certain fundamental rights that citizens of South Dakota who live in that colony possess, that members of the corporation who live in that colony possess. Where do we draw the line? Is every time you get a dispute, you have an excommunication. Well, state courts can't go near that. Sorry.
Well, I think in this case, like I said before, initially it was an issue that could be decided by the courts. But now that you have an excommunication and we're dealing with a corporation that's governed by the church, and that you must be a member of the church to be a member of the corporation, and now that our dispute's getting into whether or not the appellants are members, what's the true church at Hutterville? Who are the true elders? That issue, I don't think a court can dive into. I don't think the court can answer all those questions.
What about Mr. McMahon's point that everyone is still living on the colony? Everyone is still apparently a member of the colony. I hate to use that word, but he wants to say that there's no difference between Group 1 and the big church, and everybody's still a member of the church.
There is a difference. And if you read the affidavits, specifically the affidavits appellants submitted, the affidavits of Mike Cheddar, They even acknowledge there's a difference. Mike Cheddar's affidavit says that the Kleinsasser Church is not a true church. And that, so that brings into play, who's the decision-making body at Hutterville? And there's numerous courts out there that said when that's in dispute, courts can't decide who the decision-making body is. Is it Kleinsasser or is it the WIF faction? I don't think the trial court can decide that issue. I also want to make it clear that after that October 18th meeting was held, that the appellants are the ones who filed a motion to amend the temporary restraining order. It was at that time that they filed two affidavits indicating that Reverend Kleinsasser's church was not the true church, that the elders who excommunicated appellants were not the true elders. These affidavits basically said the excommunication was invalid. This was the first time religion was brought into play in this case, and it was not done so by the appellees, contrary to appellant's assertion. The appellees did not interject religion into this lawsuit in an attempt to derail the litigation and get the matter dismissed. The fact of the matter is, at a religious colony, when the corporate purpose is to carry out the Hutterian faith, and you have a dispute now as to membership and who the decision-making body is and who the true elders are, the issue can't be decided by the court. I think the Decker case, which appellants admit controls, is almost identical to this case. In Decker, you have the plaintiffs following Reverend Kleinsasser. You have the defendants following Reverend Wythe. The defendants are expelled by the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs then bring suit alleging various cause of actions which arise out of their excommunication. In Decker, this court stated that courts have no constitutional basis to interfere with the religious dispute when the cause of action is essentially a challenge to the church's decision to remove plaintiffs as members. This court also said some very important things regarding the bylaws and articles at a Hutterite colony. This court said that an inspection of the articles show that the operation of the economic enterprises of a Hutterite colony are inseparable from its religious principles. This court also said that the bylaws indicate a failure to follow the rules of the religion can lead to expulsion from the church and corporation, and that there is no separate secular life at a religious colony. I think this case even goes further than Decker and requires more entanglement into religious doctrine than Decker. In the Decker case, the plaintiff's cause of action asked whether or not plaintiffs suffered from tortious conduct as a result of their excommunication. In this case, a court is being asked to decide the validity of the excommunication of appellant church members under the tenets, rules, and faith of the Hutterian Church. So I think a court has to become more entangled in religious doctrine under the scenario in this case than in the Decker case. I'd also like to point out that along with Decker, you have the Woolman case out of the Eighth Circuit, also very similar to the facts in this case. In Woolman, you have plaintiffs who applied for injunctive relief to prevent defendants from expelling them from membership. The plaintiffs in that case followed Reverend Kleinsasser. The defendants followed Reverend Wythe. There was a dispute that arose as a result of the division of views as to who the true senior elders were. The court in Woolman dismissed the matter based on lack of subject matter jurisdiction. In doing so, the court said the matter involved more than religious faith, it involved a religious lifestyle. I think both the Decker and Woolman courts make it very clear that church doctrine and policy pervade the articles and bylaws in a Hutterite colony. Like South Dakota, many...
Let me stop you there. Let's just take a hypothetical. If Judge Von Wald was being asked simply to determine whether a majority vote had taken place at a certain meeting, he could do that under neutral principles, couldn't he?
He could do that. However, I think based on the issues raised by appellants, he couldn't, because you need to know who the members are before the vote can be taken. And right now we have a dispute as to who the members of the corporation are.
Well, I noticed in the briefs, in addition to the officers and directors that were excommunicated, there was some talk about other supporters. I wasn't able to determine what that meant, how extensive that was.
How extensive the other support?
The other excommunications of other members were.
The members excommunicated.
What does the record show on that?
What does the record show? The record shows that when you consider everyone who has been excommunicated, which would be all of the plaintiffs in this case, plus three other members, that the Reverend with followers do not have the majority.
Is that in the record? Because that you're saying that enough members were purportedly excommunicated that they didn't have a majority to...
That is correct, yes.
Where can I find that in the record?
That is shown in the, I believe in the October 18th minutes, which would be attached to the affidavit of George Waldner, the third affidavit specifically. I know that they're there.
I want to get back, same issue I addressed with Mr. McMahon on the definition of membership under the corporate documents. Include two things, living on the land and receiving benefits of the trust. Isn't that the definition within the corporate document of who a member is?
That is stated in the articles and bylaws. However, I do want to point out that Article 2, Section 1 specifically states that a director must be a member of the Hatterian Church. So a director for sure has to be a member of the Hatterian Church. I think based on what the courts have said in Woolman and what this court has said in Decker and what the articles state regarding members shall be associated with the Hatterian Church, that there's no question that you have to be a member of the church to be a member of a Hutterite corporation. I don't think I could go out and become part of a Hutterite colony and not follow their religion. And I think that's been made clear by the courts and by the articles and bylaws. Specifically, Article 11 does state, the corporation is a church and a religious corporation, and its members shall be associated with the Hutterian Church and Brotherhood. So you do need to be a member of the Hutterite Church in order to be a member of the corporation. I think that's very clear. In addition, you have to live in the colony and live out of the community chest.
So it's your client's position that due to the excommunication, they are, by definition, not a member of the Hutterian Church?
Correct. Or the corporation.
Okay.
I also want to point out that there's courts, specifically the Chase Court and the Jones case, that do say whenever the identity of a decision-making body is in dispute, that determination needs to be left to the church. And as I pointed out, in this case, we do have a dispute as to who the decision-making body is. Also, if I pronounce this correctly, the Milokovic case states that an evaluation of conflicting testimony concerning internal church procedures requires excessive entanglement with religion and violates the Establishment Clause. There's no question in this case that conflicting testimony needs to be looked at, because you have affidavits filed by appellants saying the Clients Foster Church is not the church, the elders who excommunicated appellants are not the true elders, and that the appellants are in fact members of the church. And you have affidavits filed by the appellees saying the Clients Foster Church is the church at Hutterville. That decision was made by the minister, George Waldner Sr., when the divide occurred. So there definitely is conflicting testimony in the record regarding church procedures and whether or not appellants have been validly excommunicated. Based on everything I just set forth, I don't, there's no question that this matter can't be decided based on the neutral principles of laws. This matter requires a court to determine whether members were removed for violating the rules and faith of the Hutterite Church and whether or not that excommunication was proper under religious law.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Your time has expired. Mr. McMahon, you have 10 minutes, sir.
You know, procedurally, I think there's something, if it's unclear, I need to straighten it out. But when the first election was held in February of 2009, there's no question that my clients were members of whatever you want to call it. There had been no action taken to excommunicate them from anything. So a majority of the members at that point in time elected my clients to the positions of president, vice president, secretary, treasurer. Okay, February of 2009. This purported excommunication from group one, and all you have to do is look at, I think it's the third affidavit of Mr. Waldner. He talks about Schmidlite Conference Group One. That he talks about Schmidlite Conference Group One. And he talks about after that, the Schmidlite Conference Group One had a meeting. You know, there's one thing that's not in dispute here, and it's that there's a disagreement among the parties as to what the proper Hutterite Church is, evidently. Counsel said her clients don't even recognize anymore that there's any other church, but clearly that's established even in Cheddar that there was a disagreement, okay? So now what you've got is under the bylaws and articles, this valid election occurred in February, and then later in September, we've got the minority through Mr. Waldner who says, hey, I've got an idea, because even in the first pleadings, they didn't raise it. They wanted the same thing. It's only after they lost at the trial court. It's okay, I've got an idea. Let's kick them out, and then we can argue that it's an entanglement. It's not because of the group one, group two thing that we talked about. So if you buy their argument, and you touched on this, Justice Gilbertson, and that is basically the bylaws mean nothing. Because as soon as one group takes control with a majority of the voting members, the other group can just say, ah, you're excommunicated. So now they've got themselves in a position where the court's going to say, oh, hands off, we can't. But you don't have to do that here, and we can't be where we are at. All you have to do is, under neutral principles, look at the bylaws and the articles.
But again, doesn't that assume that the bylaws and articles do not require membership?
No. It does require membership. It requires membership in the Hutterite Church. Actually, it doesn't require membership. What it actually says is associated with the Hutterian Church.
Except for directors, they have to be members. That's explicit.
It does say members there, but interesting on directors, you know what it says on directors? It says a director need not be a member of the corporation, but he must be a member of the Hutterian Church. It doesn't say group one, it says Hutterian Church. So you can have somebody that's not even a member of the corporation be on the board of directors, as long as they're a member of the Hutterian Church. The whole issue here is if this court is going to decide that Hutterite, Hutterian, if all that means is group one, you know, I think you're going someplace that you can't go. You can't decide what that means. All you can do is read what it says. It says the Hutterite Church. It doesn't differentiate between groups and infighting and sects and Kleinsaucer and Whip. You can't go there. I agree with that. But what you do know is that all of these people are members of the Hutterite Church.
Is there anything in the record? I know we have precedential value to our decision, and there are numerous colonies in South Dakota. Is there anything in the record that would indicate that this is a unique set of bylaws and articles of incorporation, or are they fairly standard with other colonies?
Well, I think they're pretty standard. I can't answer your question.
They clearly match Decker, it looks like.
Yes, and I think the same person drafted virtually all of these, and I think they're...
All right.
My understanding is that they're very similar, and I think it's very telling, you know, that they could have gone back and amended these articles and bylaws, and they didn't. I mean, there isn't anything to say that they couldn't provide that the president of Hutterville is always the senior elder of the Schmidlite Conference Group 1 church. They could do that, but they didn't. They didn't. That was from 92 until 2009. I mean, we're talking 17 years. There was no amendment. They left it as Hutterite Church, and everybody knows what the Hutterite Church is. It's the big church. And so, and I think you just have to read it, and that's what neutral principle says. It even says you can read church documents if you can do it secularly. And here, if you read what it says Hutterite Church, that's all. You don't have to go any further than that to decide this issue. And I think under the very narrow facts of this case, I know you want to, and I think everybody in this courtroom wants to avoid excessive entanglement. But we also have to weigh what is it that we allow these churches to do when they're incorporated as nonprofits, and we get all those advantages. Does that mean we give them those advantages and then they are just free to do what they want? Are they free to ignore their bylaws and articles? Because that's what's being done here. So, thank you.
Yeah, I have one last question. And I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but, you know, one thing that's troubled me, you've said that Decker's good law, but, you know, how could we decide in Decker that religious and secular life is so intertwined on a colony that we can't decide a tort, and yet we could decide this issue involving excommunications and membership? And
well, there's two responses to that. Number one, my argument is you don't even get to the excommunication question in this to decide this question that's before you. And I would agree that under Decker, if you think you have to decide the excommunication question, then you can't go there. I mean, that's what Decker says. I'm not arguing that. I'm saying you don't even have to go there by secularly interpreting the articles and bylaws. Secondly, Decker was a tort, and my recollection is that the allegation there was that there was malice by the majority in kicking them out of the colony or trying to get them to leave. And the issue, as I read it, was that to decide whether there was malice for booting members out of the colony, you had to look at what the doctrines of the church and the community and things were. And you had to go beyond the bylaws to determine the question of malice. In other words, were they following the rules and regulations that the majority of the community had decided, we're going to go this way? Now, were these people following those rules? And to do that, you had to get into what the church policy was. And that's how I distinguish the two, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Court will be in recess for 10 minutes.